You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Welcome, Dream Team, to another episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD, and FX trading. This week, it's the Lord's birthday. Do you want to sing?
Yeah, happy birthday to you.
He's
happy
off.
Birthday
He's
to
off
you.
Doing other things.
He's gone.
Happy birthday, the Tins. I hope you've had a wonderful day. Husk is back with his back.
Back.
How are you?
Yeah, good. The rehab's gone all right. Like I did my first day's proper rehab today, lower body. A bit of weights because the upper body has been withering away and I can't have that. You can't have a mouth like mine and a tiny pencil body. It doesn't work. Mr. Spaghetti Arms, we're not at home to a skinny upper body. So I've got to sort that out. But it's very exciting. And I think Chloe's just glad to help me out the house.
I think you've actually got more colour in your cheeks as well. I'm not quite sure how you've done that, but you look better.
Thank you.
Than you have done. This week, ladies and gents, we're going to get right down to business. No messing about. We have got, I think, one of the guys who is going to write some very interesting headlines over the next few weeks, months and years. He's an instrumental part of the Quins lineup, the comeback kings of last season. And thankfully, to much relief to both of us having invited him on, he has literally just been announced in Eddie Jones' 34-man squad for the Autumn Nations Cup. Quins number 8, England number 8, Alex Dombrandt, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to see you. Having arrived in...
Yeah, very interesting. You know, we obviously can't shut him up off mic. Now he's gone all media.
Yeah.
Hello.
Page 16.
Very excited.
Game of two halves.
I was outside the front and I was walking along and I got a thought, oh, Husk, turn around. I thought it was just a fan because there are a few of them. And this guy was leaning out the window of what looks like a portable shoebox on wheels. And I looked, I squinted and I thought, who the hell is that? I was like, oh my God, it's Alex Dombrandt in what appears to be one of them Fisher Price cars, you know, you give the kids, the little orange ones.
Yeah.
And he's driven forward, whipped it in, reverse, one-handed, yeah. Like window down, just went to stay humble, and just sort of threaded it in next to my car. So the first priority, we have some incredible listeners with some big brands. We need to update the vehicle because I know you stay humble.
Unless you love it.
Unless you love it, but we know you don't love it.
Yeah, it's been good to me over the years. But yeah, if there's anyone out there listening that could... help me upgrade, I'd be much appreciated.
What is it that you're driving, out of interest?
It's a Ford Fiesta.
Strong.
Yeah.
I had a
white as well.
White Ford Fiesta. Yeah, just been cleaned. Very nice.
Is it just for the show?
I didn't see any, like, does it have a good head unit? You splashed out a few speakers?
No, just the standard stuff. Just the standard.
I had a Ford Escort as my first ever car, and my parents very sweetly gave it to me for my birthday, but in giving it to me, actually, I'm not sure I can say this, so I'm going to say it anyway. They got my sister to drive in it. And they said, what do you think of the new car? And I said, she looks like a cleaner. And my parents went, happy birthday, son. I was like, really, really great cleaner.
Yeah,
one of the best. Just what I've always wanted.
Yeah.
Did me some great mileage. Harrison Ford.
Is that what you called it?
Gone and long forgotten.
Harrison Ford? Is that what you named your car?
Harrison Ford.
Do you have a name for yours?
No, I actually don't. You got any ideas?
White Thunder. Oversell it. Go, fucking hell, here's Alex Dombrandt in White Thunder. Oh, God, did you hear it like a rumbling? It's nice.
Yes.
What was it? About 900cc?
God knows.
What is the dream car?
I've always wanted the Range Rover. I like them. A Range Rover Velar. I think they're quite, like, slick.
Well, funny enough, actually, Range Rover do a lot of good work with some very important up-and-coming and special rugby players.
Yeah.
But also, I wouldn't want to...
And podcasts.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to... sort of rule you out the new Honda deal with England. No, don't laugh. Because stay humble. There's some rascal. About Honda Civic in there? Or what about all those, you know, Tokyo Drift? You know, those, do they have Honda GTOs? Is that right? Did I make that up?
I don't know.
Yeah, well,
I know nothing about cars.
All right, I'm pretending I'm more street than I am from my middle class background.
Yeah. We'll sort you out with a new car. Or England will sort you out. Someone will sort you out.
I'm willing to listen.
But Range Rover first, Honda second. But, you know, Honda, we also like you.
Yes, we do. Thank you for coming in first and foremost. How is life? I mean, life, I imagine, is quite a rollercoaster at the moment. Let's deal with the immediate. WhatsApp group was formed. Well done, you're into the England. Is that relief? Is that, right, let's get down to it. What are the emotions when you were named at 2:30 today?
Yeah, a bit of both, I think. A bit of relief to be in there. But then sort of overall just excitement, just to sort of get going. But it's kind of a weird one. Obviously, we still got one more club game before we all like join up to go into camp. So yeah, no, excited to, for what's to come, but then also, you know, excited to get one more game for Quinns before going off.
Did Eddie call you? Did he call you before and say, listen, you're in or out, or did you just get a message?
No call, just sort of in a WhatsApp group about two-ish maybe, and then it was announced at three, so yeah.
And do you know everyone in that? Have you got everyone's number in that WhatsApp group? Or there are lots of numbers in there that you haven't got stored in your phone, and therefore you're clicking on the biopic to see. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you
do that? I don't have all of the numbers in. So, and some of them, you know, sometimes you get the name like in little writing, but even some of them didn't have the name. So,
yeah, those ones
and some no pictures as well.
Yeah.
So,
very shit. Those ones.
It was a weird one.
And is there a lot of chat, or is it just a couple of thumbs up emojis? See you in a week's time. What is the general content?
Literally, just like a message, just to say congratulations on being selected, and sort of more information to follow, sort of about like the testing and obviously details for jersey and sort of flights, I guess, and all that. So, no, literally just one message to say well done and information to follow. So. Just leave it there, really.
I think you should pull the pin out and throw something real gnarly in there straight off the bat. A meme. I mean, we had a thing where WAS, a new group of players came round, and a guy called Ed Shervington used to run the WhatsApp group and was like really aggressive. He'd always ask for certain pictures of certain things. I don't understand why he wanted it, but he's a very odd chap. But someone misread it and said, listen, send the best picture or video you've got in. And this guy sent a picture of a piece of bread with a dog's head through it. You've probably seen them. Right, and all the other lads were sending slightly more graphic material, let's put it that way. And this guy misjudged it, put it in there, and he was instantly named Bread Dog. And that's still his nickname to this day. So if you get it wrong, it could be quite amazing. So
I think I just not taken the chances. Yeah. I think I just
stay humble.
Just, yeah,
stay
the media
exactly
handbooks
that.
Are better than they used to be.
Yes,
I
mean, right. Encouraged. Don't have fun.
And obviously, well done, Marcus, as well. Did we chat about these things with him, or is he off doing other things today? Have you sort of said, see you in there?
Yeah, no, because we were training today. So, I was sort of caught up with him and obviously said, yeah, well done to each other. And yeah, obviously, like I get on really well with him. I spend a lot of time away from rugby with him. So obviously, it's nice to see him getting his rewards as well. So.
I was actually going to ask that. He posted something very nice about you on Twitter the other day. Mm. I mean, how did that bond come about? Were you friends beforehand, or has it just grown being at Quinns together?
Yeah, so no, before Quinns, I didn't know him. Obviously knew of him, but didn't know him at all. So literally it's just developed being at Quinns. And yeah, we both live in Guildford. I live just outside of Guildford. So on off days, we're always with each other having food or coffee. And Caden Murley, who lives with Marcus. It's just developed at Quinns, and we get on really well. We have similar interests. It's like a friendship that's just evolved from Quinns, really.
Because not every day they get, you know, backs, friends with forwards.
Yeah, no, it's just an interesting one. Yeah.
Well, so I wonder if Marcus is getting right. Make sure Alex looks after when it comes to any sort of contact. Having a number 10 friend with a back row, just going, right, yours, and just get,
Did you have any 10s asking for your...
Nah, backs wouldn't talk to me, but
with forwards.
No, actually,
or subs,
sort
or coaches,
common theme, or any of my school friends,
or fans,
or my wife, or my family. Yeah,
they got there quickly. Interesting. I mean, obviously, there's so many things to talk to you about, but I'm very interested in your connection with Marcus on the field. And I mean, across the board, Quinns are playing sensational rugby, but the two of you have got a very, very nice, with Danny obviously in the middle, sort of connection at the moment. Is that just natural? Is it something that you've spent a lot of time talking about and analysing and trying things? How have you got that understanding?
I think quite a lot of it's natural. I think we read each other really well. I also almost know what he's going to do the phase after, and similar with me in terms of usually he comes down the corner and I pop up on his inside. That's sort of our trademark thing, if you like. But obviously, if you add DC to the mix as well, I think we've got a really good 8-9-10 combo. We all get on really well off the pitch, and I guess in training, just improving those relationships on the field and obviously off the field as well, it's only gonna better what you do on the field.
Yeah,
I always find that really, really interesting, those connections, because it does make a massive difference if you're going to run a line and you know that you're going to get the ball, or more often than not, they can either give it to you or not. I mean, I when I played, I had an unbelievable relationship with Owen Redding from WAS. You know, and actually, I think some of the best rugby I was able to play was in those early days, because they always hit me. Yeah. You know, and I think it's nice for a 9 and 10 to know that if they give you the ball, you're going to be able to get over the gain line. It must be frustrating for people inside and outside of you, because I know certainly with England training, Billy and Mako, I'd be there. I just was, by the end of my career, I was just the ultimate dummy line. It would always go across to them. But it must be quite nice to do that, and also know that at least 5 or 6 times a game, you're going to get the ball and be able to show what you can do.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes I just sort of come around the corner and we just clock eye contact, and then it's just there, and he knows the line I'm going to run, and I know that he's going to get out because he's a great running nine, and then just hit me. So sometimes you don't really need to even say anything. It's just you look at each other. He knows, because of like the how many reps you're doing in training, he knows where I'm going to be. And I think we all want to play the game in the same way. And I think that's a real positive as well. So we all understand that. I know that when he gets a penalty, he's going to look to quick tap first. So then I know that as soon as we get a penalty, I'm there. Do you know what I mean? And similar with Marcus, I know that sometimes we'll just look at each other. He knows that I know that he's going to kick it over the top. So I know that I'm going to try and get it, type of thing. So
is Marcus quite, because a lot of the feedback that came back from the Lions tour, for example, with Marcus, was that initially in that first kind of training session, he was already bossing people around.
Yeah.
Is he not shy in coming forward? Like, if you wouldn't run a proper line, would he call you on it? Is he quite aggressive with people without a detail?
Yeah, no, he'll tell. Like, he's very demanding of, like, what he wants, but he does it in a really good way. He understands the person. I think that's what we've been really big on at Quinn's, is sort of building relationships and getting to understand people, so that if you need to have those difficult conversations, you understand the person, so you know how to deliver it in the best way. Obviously, sometimes shouting, you know, swearing at people will get the best out. So I know that I can probably go at Marcus quite hard and he'll just take it and get on with it. Whereas someone else...
Who have you got to be gentle with?
It's a tough one. I'm not sure, like...
Joe Marler, just in case you whack your back.
It's a difficult one, but like I said, it's just, you know, like some people... Then they'll go in their shell if you then go at them, and then that's the last thing you want. So, no, we're quite big at that at Quinn's and building relationships, so then you can have those difficult conversations in the best way.
Was that something that people factored in and brought up and said, listen, actually, we need to do that, or is that something you've organically done?
I think, we raised it in terms of at the start of the season. We actually all said that we're not, as a group, we're not great at taking criticism, and like quite a lot of people aren't. It's quite... You know, no one wants to be told that you're doing something wrong or you're not good at that. Like, you know, I'll be admit, I don't like it when, you know, you get pulled up in a review and you'd be like, oh, you need to do that. And you're like, all right, you do. But you're like, oh, it makes you feel that way, sort of thing. So we all know as a group that we needed to be better at that, and we all accepted that. So then it's therefore, like I said, building those relationships, getting to understand the person, how they react, how you get the best out of them, and then go from there, really.
How do you find that? I mean, how do you find that nugget, which is that as a group, we don't accept criticism in the way that perhaps we could do in order to find it useful. I'm interested as to how that falls,
I guess,
out of
it's
conversation.
Not, I think we all just came together as a group and just thought that, you know, when we do things wrong, we need to be able to have those difficult conversations, and they're not easy, and it can make people feel uncomfortable. But when you get to a point where you can regularly have those difficult conversations, it's only going to be a benefit to the team.
Surely that improved as soon as Brownie left. I reckon I've known Mike Brown for, I don't know, almost 20 years. I don't think it was ever his fault on anything. So it's always quite funny. I know you're not expecting you to dob him in. I'm only being tongue-in-cheek. But it is interesting about those kind of conversations within a squad, because I think a lot of people, when you say you're not good at accepting criticism, it will be, I imagine the way you would have found it is in a meeting, someone will play a clip, and they'll go, but if someone else had done that, I would have been okay. Instead of going, okay, I understand that, or someone in training going, you know, put your hands up or run a better line or hold your depth or whatever. And someone, you see their body language going down. I think there's a lot of teams actually in rugby don't have the ability to take criticisms because it's hard.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you do it in the middle of a training session. I know, like Danny Cipriani was very keen on attention to detail and would be very kind of outspoken, and that's fine. Owen Farrell, you know, even more so. But I think he's even toned it down a little bit, because just understanding how people react and what's important, but still being able to be very honest and go, listen, I can say to you, you're not running that line well. You didn't leg drive. Why the fuck did you give that offload? We didn't need to do it. And for you to go, instead of going, oh, fuck off. You can't even offload if you tried. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of stuff, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think like the more often that you can have those conversations, like the better it is. For example, like if I had like a difficult conversation with someone 1 week and then a couple of months later, I'm then going at him again, being like, oh, you need to do this better. Then all of a sudden he's gone, well, it's been a couple of months and you must have a problem with me. Whereas if you're regularly, you know, trying to help each other out, trying to better each other, and that's the end of the day, that's what we come up with. We're doing it to better each other and like better the team as a whole, because we want to win the Premiership again. So I think once you understand what that end goal is and understand why we're having those conversations, it helps.
And genuinely out of interest, how do you have the conversations? Is it everybody in a, is it one-on-one? Is it everybody in a group? Is it?
It's just like, it's however you just feel constant. Natural. Like, yeah, if it's a review, like just say, look, like we need to do this better and just do that. Or if it's, you feel like, I guess it comes back to understanding the individual. Like if I think after training, I need to pull something cut, then you have the conversation when you're walking back to the change rooms. You know what I mean? It's understanding when the best time to do it is, because, you know, in front of everyone might not be the best time, might be one-to-one. So
I'm going to throw it out there and say that your triumph last year in the Premiership is one of the most extraordinary stories that I think that league will ever tell. Mm. And it's fantastic. I'm so pleased that you've backed it out. I know obviously you didn't get the result that you wanted at the weekend, but it's you're off and running again, which is fabulous to see. Just winding back the last 18 months of your career, I mean, you are now standing at an unbelievably exciting point, and you are about to hopefully take on the mantle of what everyone has been talking you up to do. But just pick a line through the last 18 months or so, and the fact that, you know, we actually did an interview, probably around that 18 months ago, and Paul Gustard, I think, was either going or just left, and the whole thing was up in the air, and suddenly you're here, you know, there will be taxes and to pay and bins to put out and mortgages for another day, but you've now got what everyone would love to have the opportunity to do. How do you equate it all and square all of the last year and a half?
Difficult to put into words, probably. I think just crazy, just a roller coaster. I think from where we were, like down and out, if there was relegation, probably people were saying, oh, they're in trouble here. And then how we turned it around and like how we came together as a group and the weeks that led up to like the final and then obviously winning it, how we got stronger and stronger as a group. I think Joe Marler mentioned it in his interview after the final, just how strong and how close we were as a group, and that just built over the weeks leading up to the final, and then just like that, to win it was unbelievable. Like the best day and night of my life. Like I genuinely paid good money to wake up and do it all over again. Like it was special, and like obviously 10,000 people there, like would have loved it to be an 82,000 people, but they still made a hell of a noise, and it was a great day.
Why and how, when you look back now, did it click in the way it did?
I think us as players took a lot of responsibility. Obviously, unfortunately, it landed on one man's head, and that's how things go, unfortunately, in the pro game. But I think as a group, we all come together and said, we haven't been performing well enough as individuals, so we all need to up it a little bit. And yeah, we just came together, and I think Billy Millard did a great job at helping steering the ship. Like, didn't do much coaching, left the coaching to the coaches and the senior players to sort of come up with how the weeks looked. But in terms of like speaking in meetings and, like I say, just steering the ship in the right direction was really good from him. And yeah, I just think there was a lot of trust between the coaches and the players. We come in on a Monday morning and the leadership group and the coaches be like, okay, then so what do you want this week in order to beat Northampton on the weekend? And we go, well, this is what we think we need. And there was just a lot of trust. The coaches trusted us and we trusted the coaches to come up with the best week possible to give us the best chance on the weekend.
I mean, I'm fascinated by it. And the reason we wanted to get you on the podcast, I want, A, your story and the way I love the way you play and the way you smile on your face and kind of the fact you were playing uni rugby not that long ago, came in, you know, with no kind of, well, as far as like no sort of pedigree before that, and then just came on and were like already being talked about with England. Always a great place to be. We didn't get selected for whatever reason, but you had that story. And then that coincided with this kind of re-emergence of Quinns. But, you know, there's a lot that was sort of talked about with Saracens for years about them doing things in their own way. I really like to go and just sort of peel back some of the layers without revealing too many of the secrets about Quinns. Is why is it so different? So my impression from the outside was that obviously Paul Gustard, who was one of the best coaches I worked with, really good guy, loved him. He left, didn't work out for whatever reason. And then sort of no kind of head bloke was put in charge. Mm. And then you suddenly hear these little snippets of stuff coming out, like Chinese whispers, not doing a lot of contact, that the lunatics are running the asylum. They're setting the parameters. Everyone's having a great time. You suddenly start playing a brand of rugby that we're not seeing very much in the Premiership. you know, Marcus Smith's coming to fore. You're coming to fore. Danny Kerr's got a resurgence. You know, Mike Brown's playing out of skin. Joe Marler. All this kind of stuff is happening. So I wonder if you could just break it down in terms of when you say that the players were kind of running it, in what way? Like, what would they come in and say, going, right, we don't want to do a lot of contact. We want to do these kind of moves. What kind of stuff were they saying, firstly?
Yeah, I guess, obviously, with it happening in the middle of the season, there's not, you can't do massive changes. But I think we made a couple of tweaks to sort of training. I think the main point is enjoyment. We wanted to get to a point where everyone was enjoying it. Everyone felt part of it. And like, yeah, everyone was enjoying coming to work and training. So we changed and did a bit more attack and like did some more sort of like games type attack and stuff like that. And everyone was enjoying training and everyone felt part of it. And yeah, I guess in terms of like games, if we had a hard game and we were feeling pretty beat up, then we could come into the coaches and be like, look, well, look, I don't think we need a lot of contact. We'll do, I think, 5 minutes contact on the Tuesday session where we do this drill where it'll be live. But apart from that, that'll be it. And, you know, it's up to boys then. If you want to get a couple of shots in, like on the pads after training, doing your extras, then that's your prerogative type of thing. They trusted us. They're like, sweet, okay, we'll do that. But we earned the right to do that because we pitched up on a Saturday. Like, we were physical on a Saturday. We put our bodies on the line. We worked hard for each other. So that means when we come in the morning, on the Monday morning, we had that, you know, look, we've done what you asked for. Like, and it was that give and take.
Do you use data for that? Do you use GPS to go, well, actually, look, anyone can tell whether the game's sort of physical or not because you can show it. But for someone like yourself, so I see your stats all the time. You know, I think the other day, you know, something like 15 tackles, 7 carries, X amount of rucks, 48 meters made or something, for example. That obviously shows you had a physical game, but then you factor in the GPS. Because I big believe that clubs don't use GPS properly. They use it to tell you when you're not training, but they don't go, oh, by the way, you ran 7K that game. Was there anything around that data that you're sort of that they used as well to justify that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I think a big one for Quinns was the gum shields we were wearing last year and this year, which was new. They come in, it's basically they had like a chip in your gum shield, which measured, I think it measures like your G-forces and like the impacts of your hits, like impacts of your tackles and your carries. And it goes like straight live to a computer. So then like after the game and during the game, they can see like how many impacts you had and how hard those impacts were. And then from that, they can sort of address your week accordingly. So obviously someone like Will Evans, when he was fit, was doing some crazy numbers in terms of impacts and the G-force that
did it
was,
shock you, having seen like the original GPS stuff, did it shock you to see those numbers when they go, Alex, this is what you're putting into your body?
Yeah, so sort of was like, we'd never had anything to like compare it to at the start because I think we were one of the first clubs to do it. But when they said like this was the norm and then this was what some of the boys were hitting, it was shocking. But it then almost like you probably got it in your time where you went in on a Monday morning and was like, oh, I'm pretty beat up. And they're like, well,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what do you mean you're pretty beat up? Of course you're beat up. You just played a game. You're like, well, I'm done here. Like, yeah. I can't train today. And they're like, I'll get on with it type of thing. But
that was my entire career in a nutshell.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, with this, you've got something to back it up. And the medical department and the S&C department at Quinns were so good in terms of taking that information on board and using it, not just using it as like a tick box and pushing it to one side. They were using it to better our weeks to make sure that ultimately we were then fresh for the next game.
Unbelievable. There'll be old school defence coaches muttering into their pints because the proof is in the pudding.
That's what I mean. And I've genuinely said this, you know, till I'm blue in the face, that so much about rugby is we do stuff because we've always done it as opposed to the rationale. And I think that if you had having a massive drop off in the way you were being physical on the weekends, you could turn around and say, actually, do you know what? Psychologically, we need to fill each other in on a Tuesday to play well. But I think you've proven that you don't need to do that. I mean, did they cut length of training down as well in terms of how much time you were on your feet? So you were, because one of the things I find fascinating is obviously the season's only going for a few rounds, right? 5 games or whatever. Pre-season, clubs end up breaking players before they've even started to achieve what, I don't know. And then you already start the season tired. Then all week you batter yourself, forgetting that no one wins any awards for training. You win awards for a performance. And I learned that. I found that very hard myself because a lot of times I was getting all these extras, lifting all these weights, squatting this, doing that. And then the prize was on the weekend. And someone just said to me, why are you doing it? And I just wonder whether at Quinns that you've tweaked all those things, not just the contact.
Yeah, like we've made some changes. Like we don't do a team run anymore. So like our normal week of a Saturday game would be Monday, like walking through and going through all like the plays, meeting and gym. Tuesday would be like a main attack day. Wednesday off. Thursday would be defence day. Then Friday off and then play Saturday.
Oh my word.
In terms of
the
like when
hours of PlayStation like, that are getting through.
Like when you're in. Do you know what I mean? But like if you're getting all of that work done and all your gym work and all your conditioning work, then we were getting to a point where we were doing a team run. But sometimes it always, what's the word? Is it counterintuitive?
Counterintuitive, yeah.
That's a big word for me. but like, so sometimes we're doing a team run and obviously a team run, you want to build confidence going into the game. But sometimes, you know, we weren't like, it was a bit scrappy, some of our team runs. So then we thought, well, if we're getting our, if everyone knows their knowledge by the Thursday and everyone's happy, what is actually the purpose of the team run? What, surely we just prefer have another day to recover, put your feet up and then go into Saturday flying. So for me, like I couldn't even imagine doing a team run now. But I mean, to quite a lot of clubs, it's probably the norm.
Because you always did it.
Exactly. So I think going to, on that point, it's almost like people, are, it's that change, isn't it? People are scared to make that change. But yeah, like for us, it's been a massive help, I think.
Have you noticed that because there's been a reduction in, say, the contact and the training, that a lot of players then take matters into their own hands with them doing extras? So you will see that it's not just, so for example, when I played in France, you know, mostly with England, you'll know with the England team, having been around it, is that when training finishes, you spend a lot of time trying to chase people in because the training finishes and the lads are out there, you'll be working, you're carrying your footwork, whatever it might be. But in France, for example, as soon as the whistle went for end of session, they're all gone. Like you're the only one out there and they're laughing at you. I wonder with Quinns, if you've modified that, did you suddenly find guys going, actually, I'm going to work on much more of my individual skills?
Yeah, definitely. And it's not like we were doing no contact in a week. We were doing contact and it was, you know, bone on bone and it was live. But yeah, like you say, a lot of boys then, if they weren't getting a couple of hits, they would do stuff after training and they take it into their own hands and you find that pretty much everyone would be out there doing extra little bits to help them for the weekends. So.
Just at the last bit on that, I just wondered, what about the kind of the off-field? Was there like specific bonding thing? Do you spend more time together as a team, socials? Because I know Joe Marlowe, obviously when he was captain, when the Lunatics really were running the asylum, you know, he had the Wheel of Misfortune that he used to have. And, you know, there was kind of quite a lot of emphasis around that. But a lot of teams talk about having a culture and bonding, but sometimes it's a bit paper thin because when you start losing games, that pulls everything apart. What did you guys do that slightly differently in that respect?
Obviously, it's been probably different for everyone. Obviously, with COVID and stuff, it's sort of limited what you've been able to do. But Andy Sanger, our player welfare development officer at Quinns, has been great in terms of organising things. And we've been sort of like getting some like pizza van down to the club, you know, where they knock it up in their little van and just having that and just like sitting outside and making sure that people stay half hour, 45 minutes more after training just to have a drink and have a bit of food together. And I think like it doesn't have to be this like crazy event that you do it. Just like if boys away from like a rugby environment, obviously still there, but not talking about rugby, an extra half hour, 45 minutes, having a drink and some food together just helps massively and just sort of doing things like that. And I think we got, you know, now things are starting to open up again, a few more like socials lined up. But yeah, I think that really helped doing those little bits.
Do you know what's really interesting is you have often said the game moves so quickly now. And you said, you know, you used to come back to England training. And you were like, I'm not sure I can do this anymore. And somehow you get into it. How long have you, what have you done? 18 months out now?
Yeah, I retired 2019. So yeah, a couple of years now.
The reason this is so interesting is that it's like a whole new evolution of the game is what we're hearing about, is that it is much less in terms of training. It's much more about the people. It's much more about get out there on a Saturday. Whereas Tins's war stories are training from 8 until 8, 5 days a week, and then going out and whatever you've got left, you put on the field on a Saturday.
I think it's so refreshing to hear about it, and also the fact that it's been delivered on the weekend. And I mean, I know I spoke to Danny Kerr after the Bristol game, and he goes, "We're the only club in the world that could be that bad. Let them get a head start, and then turn it on to that degree." And I think the very fact that you see those moments and you see those bits, it's got nothing to do with like training volume or anything else. It's got to do with, you've got, you know, a good game plan. You've got the talent. People are enjoying what they're doing. They're mentally right. And they're not being hammered into the ground. And I think that, you know, the more the game becomes attritional and the more physical it becomes, the more something's got to give. And I think that this plays really nicely into the player welfare stuff. I genuinely believe that. I know they've talked about changing the rules by 2023 for the amount of contacts in training, but that should be something
that's been done.
That's what I mean. Should have been done tomorrow. There's no need.
Do you know, are other clubs now following suit? Are you hearing other clubs saying actually we're doing a bit less? And
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about the gum shields. I think maybe potentially other clubs are looking at it, but as far as I'm aware, I'm not sure if any other clubs use it.
Well, now you've plugged them on this. Hopefully, you've got a personal sponsorship. Yeah. You know,
new car and a new gum shield.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the semi-final.
Yeah, crazy. But it was a crazy one because obviously we were down by quite a few points at half time. But at half time we were really calm. It was weird, like, you know, you being that change room on another day and everyone's, you know, effing and blinding and saying what the hell's going on here. But no, we were really calm and like DC, Marlon, Steph, Louise spoke really well about, you know, we're actually like in a good place. I think a couple of bounces of the ball went the other way, a couple of decisions, but we're not in a bad place. And I think they went out all guns blazing. And I think we felt, you know, if we could get that first score, then anything can happen. And we did that. But yeah, it was really calm at halftime, actually, which was quite surprising.
You remember both of those games until the end of days. I mean, I can still remember under-10s matches where we came back from, it was 4 points a try. You've done it at the highest level now, which is, it's an amazing story. Can I ask you about Marla and his chopper?
Yeah.
Does everyone just let Joe get away with that because it's Marla and a helicopter? Or does everyone like, what? I mean, you're reaching new levels.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, as long as he was on the pitch, I don't care how he got there. Like, he's such a massive part of what the club is about, and he was such a massive part of our success last year. And yeah, like, obviously, with his newborn, we just needed to get him there any way that we could. But yeah, I think only Joe Marler could have pulled off the chopper. I think anyone else in the chopper wouldn't have looked right. But yeah, it was just great to get him there. And he was, I don't think you get many loose heads playing, what was it, 100 and whatever minutes these days. And to do that and then back it up in a final the next week was pretty crazy. So
and he's obviously back in the England squad as well.
Yeah, great. Yeah, great to see.
Is he as big a sapper as he always has been? Or is he actually, as the leadership sort of becomes something that's put on his shoulders, I can't imagine that he's sort of eager beaver necessarily in terms of cajoling everyone, or is he?
No, he's
good. He's the same as always.
No, he's Marla's Marla, isn't he? Marla's but Marla. No, to be fair, like, I just, yeah, so impressed with just like, you know, when he speaks, everyone listens. Do you know what I mean? Like he does all of, you know, all of his jokes and pranks off the pitch. But no, when he steps on the training field, like when he talks, sorry, boys listen, and he's got such a wealth of experience. You know, he's been there and done it, you know, like DC and a few of the other boys in 2012 and, so yeah, to have them there with us last season, just sort of, you know, guiding us through, I guess, was great.
Do you think that's part of the recipe that these guys who, someone like Danny Kerr, who a lot of people would have kept in the England squad the way he's been playing, he hasn't had those opportunities for whatever reason. How important is it for you kind of younger guys to have those more senior players when you look at them, the amount of caps they've got between them, how they keep turning it on? Do they really have their sort of worth their weight in gold? Really?
Oh, massively. I remember, I think it was a few weeks before the end of the season, last season, and he actually, I think our captain, Steph Louise, got him up and wanted to speak about what it meant to him and how it felt the day he won it back in 2012. And he got up and just said like how special the day was and how much it meant to him and just like how, yeah, like special it was. And obviously when you're sitting there, I said to him the other day, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, of course it's special, but like you don't realise until you have to experience it yourself to understand how that feeling is. And he just said, it's like words can't describe it. And then obviously to then go and experience it, I was then speaking to him the other week and just said like, unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? And just like you say, to have him and Marla that have been there and done it. And, you know, they've been at the club when the club have been struggling. They've been at the club when the club have been successful. They've been there and done it at all parts. So to have them there and their experience, just like I said, to help and guide us through, has been amazing.
Do you think, looking at your journey, that any other club would have suited you apart from Harlequins? Because when I look at it and think, for my personal journey, that if I'd gone to anywhere else but Wasps, I don't think I would have had the career I had. I don't think I would have fitted in. I don't think I would have been tolerated. Like if I'd accidentally gone to Leicester, who were originally interested,
you'd be 6 feet under.
They would have killed me. They would have killed me. Would have broken me because I was, you know, a bit of a sensitive sausage back in the day.
Yeah.
I wonder, looking at you, the way Quins are with the personalities, that little bit of bravado, a little bit of flair. Mm. You coming from sort of university rugby and coming into it, kind of is almost a perfect match made in heaven.
Yeah. When you look at it now, yeah, it definitely is that. And I think obviously, like growing up supporting Quins, being a local boy like South Croydon, 45 minutes away. from the stoop. Yeah, no, definitely for me, it feels like the perfect fit. Like I love being there. I enjoy and look forward to going to work every day. And yeah, like the way we play, the way everything is at the moment, yeah, I've got no complaints.
You don't see I don't know if you're kind of very fazed by anything. Like you seem very relaxed. I don't know. I know you're passionate when you see you win, but you're kind of quite a chilled guy. Well, that's the impression I get.
Yeah, no, like I look at it as like quite a strength of mine. Like the fact that not much kind of like, you know, like I like to think I'm calm, and I think on the pitch that helps a lot. And yeah, we've got quite a lot of, you know, Marlers that, you know, can be a bit nuts. So yeah, I like to think that, you know, I bring a bit of calmness to the team. So
I didn't know were you a Quins fan growing up? Who would have been in the team when you were?
So the likes of like Robbo, DC, Jordan Turner Hall.
That's brutal.
Yeah. So like, yeah, it's crazy. I remember like the first day going into Quins and I walked through the door and I was like, I knew no one. So I was like, shit. And then like how nice they were, and Brownie, how nice they were to me. It was just like, wow. Do you know what I mean?
And how did you get picked up by Quins?
So I was at uni. So it was like my third year of uni, sent my clips off to a few clubs. And yeah, Quins and another club come back saying they're interested. And then I decided to choose Quins.
Which uni was it?
Cardiff Met.
Yes. Yeah, so I was in Wales a couple of weeks ago, and I was sitting at dinner with someone, and we were talking about you, and I was saying how impressive I think you are as a player, and like I love the way you kind of play, and you know all that pressure with England, how you just don't phase, you just get on with it and do the job. And they said his son used to go to school with you, and if he was to earmark you as a professional rugby player, then in his opinion, he said there wasn't a lot to kind of separate you guys. But then when you went on to uni, it appears like that sort of gnarly cauldron of Welsh uni rugby kind of made you into this kind of almost carefree, flamboyant player that sits perfectly with Quins. Is that fair?
No, definitely. I think going back to my school days, like I was just sort of like your standard rugby player, like played a bit of second team rugby, then played a bit of first team rugby as well in my last year. Like I was never sort of your standout player that, you know, everyone talks about at school rugby. And then went to uni with the view of playing rugby and cricket, because I love my cricket as well.
Batsman or a bowler?
Yeah, batsman. Yeah, accelerate the run rate a little bit.
Right? Stay humble. Yeah. I love that.
Wait, coming at six, is it coming at six and playing shots?
Yeah,
or
five or six. When the ball's got a bit old.
I love it. Like, do you know when you get like Elliot Daly and like Jamie George? They love cricket.
Yeah.
Guys are obviously fantastic hand-eye coordination. It's not something I know about. When they've got all the terminology, just accelerate the run rate, come in when the ball's got old, fuck, move the side screen, chief, it's a glare on the ball.
Left arm over.
Left arm over. Oi, wait till I show you my googling. I love it, mate. But don't talk up the car, but fucking hell, when it comes to cricket, absolute straight back.
Yeah. But when I started my rugby, soon realised that was taking up a lot of my time. I gave rugby a crack, but it was almost with a view of like just enjoy it and then obviously do the academics alongside it. And then first year went a lot better than I expected it to, like played in the first team, sort of got like newcomer of the season and player of the year.
Why did you suddenly go from bombing around
outwards right, with a uni lifestyle? I definitely like over my few years like grew just... I think like the S&C program that you have at university, well, especially at Cardiff Met, was, you know, as close to professional as you get. Like the facilities there are sort of second to none. But went a lot better than I expected it to. Had some interest from Welsh clubs when I was there, like spoke to a few of them. But
as in the four regions?
Ospreys, Blues and Dragons. The most serious one was probably the Blues in my start of my last year, but it would have meant that I'd have to have left uni and started my last year. Sort of like I don't want to have done 2 years to then leave uni. I think that's a bit of a waste of time. So I really wanted to finish my degree to have that in my back pocket. So decided to sort of politely decline that to finish uni. And then luckily around Christmas time, like I said, sent my clips off to a few clubs and Harlequins came back saying they're interested. And then around Christmas time, went down to meet John Kingston, who was the coach at the time with like Nick Easter and all them. And then, it went really well. And then they offered me a contract.
Did you get properly into like the uni rugby where you were like super professional, but also smashing up and get a little bit sloppy around the midfield?
Yeah, 100%. It's such a hard balance, you know, because like you're only at uni once, you know, it's like the best 3 years of your life. You can't really compare it to anything else. And when you're sort of that realization that, like you really want to go out on the piss and like enjoy like going out and with all your mates and stuff, but then also you're like, oh, actually, I could kind of make a crack of this if I knuckle down. So it's kind of like weighing it up like that. But no, I think like I have no regrets. I think I did it perfectly and enjoyed my time there.
So that's what I'm very kind of, I absolutely love about that is that a lot of players, you know, for example, I went to the academy system, right? So I never went to university. I missed out on all of that kind of experience. And it's kind of a regret of mine because everybody says how good it was. And actually, I wouldn't have held myself back if I hadn't had that opportunity because a lot of players leave school, go straight into rugby and don't get the qualifications and don't get the game time and sort of sit like 3 or 4 years in the academy just playing second team. Whereas I love what you did. You went to university, smashed it, pissed it up the wall, had a time of life, loads of stories floated in and were probably mature enough as a player and as a person to then kind of kick on. It's kind of like a lesson there, I think. And you've got a degree. So do you disagree?
Yeah. So yeah, I got 2-1.
Sorry about that.
Yeah,
could be a Ferrari waiting outside. That's what we've done here.
But no, I think like you said, like I think you'll see more and more players come through the uni system. I think a lot of people, like a lot of young lads get missed. And I think like I'd encourage a lot of boys to go to uni. Like you say, you come out with a degree and hopefully with a professional contract. But the way the Bucks Super Rugby is called now, they've got the 10 best unis, that rugby unis in that league. It's a good standard of rugby. Their programs are serious in terms of the S&C nutrition. So in terms of that, I think it's such a great avenue to go down. And I'd encourage everyone who's sort of umming and ahhing to just dive straight in.
Just realise the two of you are complete opposites because you've got shit skills, but a good rig. And you've got some really good skills.
I'd be interested to share off-field stories as well.
I'm sure.
Cardiff Uni off-field stories would be unbelievable. Yeah. That's for a separate podcast.
What I did want to ask you about, actually, because we chatted about this, we did a little interview a while ago, is that it wasn't all plain sailing at university, was it? And I mean, A, tell the story, but B, do you look back now and think, actually, do you know, I'm glad I persevered with it, but actually you could have gone and done something else very, very different?
Yeah.
What happened, first of all?
Yeah, so in my first year and third year, like unfortunately, like an unsavoury incident on both occasions, basically in a game, had my back turned and then got punched from behind. Wasn't expecting it at all. Both times, broke my jaw, had to have surgery. And then both times, sort of 5 weeks-ish, was on a liquid diet. Got 4 plates in there now, which are permanent. So it's one there, and then 2. There.
So that's a proper job.
Yeah, the first time completely like dislodged it. Sorry to the viewers. First time completely dislodged it. Then the second time was just a crack or a break in this side, I think. The police were involved both times. It was just like, it was tough. The first time it was like, you think, it's never going to happen again. So you sort of crack on with it.
And you're 19? 18, 19, 20?
So 19 the first one and 20, 21 the second time it happened. The second time it happened was quite tough. Like there was complication. There was like an infection with a plate or something like that. And like I had to go for quite a few checkups and it was tough because like you don't think you do it once, let alone twice. And that was in like the Welsh Championship. So after that second time, sort of had a sit down with my coach and just said, look, I think it's best if like I don't play that because unfortunately in that league we're Cardiff Mets, so we're student team, so people look at that and think our student team will go and try and bully them and they'll sort of cave in because we're the only like we're a team that likes to go and play rugby. We just want to play good rugby and what will be, but unfortunately you get the minority that take it into their own hands and do that. So the second time we decided that, look, I'll not play the Welsh Championship anymore and just play the Buck stuff, which was the Wednesday, which was like the important stuff in terms of like my development and like where people would watch and the standard of rugby. So that was that and sort of...
Was it that gnarly in the other one?
Yeah, school. It was like, it's not great. Like, unfortunately, you have a ref, obviously, and then the two linesmen are from the club. So in terms of like picking up things, like with the refs not looking, you're not getting done for anything. And then... like you can obviously they video it and you can send them off to try and get them sighted, but yeah, it doesn't do anything.
I mean, I missed this completely. What happened with that? Did the guy get arrested? Was it?
Yeah, so first time he got a suspended sentence, like had to pay me some compensation because he pleaded guilty to it, and then a second time pleaded not guilty, so actually had to go to court and like stand up in court like proper like movie scene type of thing, and like give evidence. But then he was found not guilty.
How can they find?
Well, yeah,
not
there
guilty?
Was like video, basically video. There was video of it, but like when it happened, it was like blurry. And before we were like he had tackled me, so we were on the floor. So kind of, he said it was like self defense. Basically, I was like saying stuff to him on the floor, and that's why he like punched me. And
oh.
Because there was like no actual video evidence.
Did you genuinely come quite close to thinking, actually, I'd rather go and play cricket?
Yeah, no, like the second time it happened, like I said, it was tough. Like there was complications. Like, to be fair, the university were really great in terms of like looking after my work, like giving me like extensions and like helping me with that side of things. But yeah, it was got to a point where it was like, is it worth it? Like, what if this happens again? Like, I can't be asked to go through it and all of the stuff that goes with it. Like, so yeah, it does. But then I think making a decision to not play that again, I had full confidence that it would actually never happen in the Buck stuff, because you have linesmen. It's like it's uni, like lads playing. Do you know what I mean? It's never going to happen. So I was then happy with that decision, and then sort of just cracked on with it. But then it actually a funny story. We didn't do too great in the last year of uni. So then in the Welsh Championship, we had to win on the last day of the Welsh Championship to stay up. So then they were like, oh, like what's the crack type of thing, like we can't, it would, that, and they were like, it's completely down to you, like. And then I was like yeah, I want to play, like I want to help, because I didn't want to be part of the team, like our uni team in that Welsh Championship, I've never got relegated, so I didn't want to be part of the team that got relegated. So we played, and then like a fight like kicked off.
Oh god.
And then our captain like got me and was just like pushed me
run off. Away
like, yeah, literally. And I was just like, yeah, I was like, I'm not like, and at that time I'd signed for Quinn, so I was like, there's no chance I'm getting,
I don't
involved.
Need any of this aggro.
Like, I'll be told a wimp for running away or whatever.
It'd be interesting then, with that mentality you said in the opening about the fact that you've still got another game with Quinn. I always used to find that very kind of weird, where you've got this goal of England and then you have to have another game between it, but actually you have to go 100% in that game, A, for your club, but actually if you try and hold yourself back or have any other thoughts other than what's in front of you in those games, you'll get caught. And I can imagine you going up back to Simon Quinn's, all this kicking off, like, anything but the face.
Talk to me about England a little bit. So obviously a big summer. What did you learn? How big a step up was it? How intense was it? What did Eddie give you as a directive?
Yeah, it was good, like a really enjoyable 2 weeks, because obviously we made the final, and then so they were in the 2 weeks previous to that, so then we were only in for 2 weeks, so we like straight into the game week. But yeah, no, I like really enjoyed it. Like, I think the squad was obviously really young, a lot of boys that hadn't had their first caps, and then there was a few boys like your Genji, Slade, Underhill that were like the senior boys there, and no, it was just a really good like environment. Everyone was like willing to learn, like just enjoying each other's company. And it's a hard one, because obviously at the end of the season everyone's pretty like shot, aren't they? So no, it was good. Like, training was, don't get me wrong, it was tough, but it wasn't, you know, like mental type of thing. And no, it was like, we really enjoyed it. And yeah, obviously to get my first cap was like sort of a dream come true, cliche to say, but it, like it was. So yeah.
And what sort of feedback have you had from Eddie? What contact are you having from him at the moment?
Yes, I like spoken to him after the last couple of games, and sort of he just asked, you know, how do you feel like you're getting on? How do you feel like you play? And then yeah,
I love the fact he's asking you.
Yeah.
It's just a trap. I'm absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think you are, mate.
Yeah. But no, like it's just sort of, yeah, see how I feel like I've gone, and then, yeah, just where we can, like, little one or two focuses for the following week and then going into the next game.
When you weren't involved, what was the thing that he was saying? Because I can't remember what he was saying publicly to you in terms of, like, initially, like, what was it? Was it work? I mean,
yeah,
was it a work rate thing going? Because I know he's very big. That at international level, it's actually seeing what a player does when the ball isn't in his hands,
yeah,
in terms of how quickly you reset, how quickly you go back. Are you prepared to chase back and all those kind of areas? Because whereas a lot of fans will see you carry or will see you tackle, but then we'll lose you because we're following on.
Yeah.
Was that the kind of thing he was talking about? Was it something completely different?
So it was more like sort of my defence, like the defensive side of my game, and just sort of how I can look to improve that. And that was sort of the talk that I had with him maybe like last season or the start of last season, and like I feel like I've improved in that area. And
what is that the number of players you're involved with, or is it the quality, or is it the
sort of terms around like the tackling, the tackle technique, and like stopping people like on the line.
I would imagine you look at you and go, if this is the size you are and this is the amount of meters you get in carrying, if I want you defensively, you should be devastating people. Yeah. How can you best do it?
Yeah, it's almost like if you're like carrying hard and using all your weight and your power in your attack, then you know, how can you do that in your defense type of thing? So, and like I've been working really hard on it, was working really hard with Guzzy with it, obviously him being a defense coach, and now with Jerry Flannery and Tabs at Quinn's. So I've made improvements in that area. So yeah, just keep sort of kicking on really.
And what hopes do you hold for November?
I want to play. Do you know what I mean? Like I've not just sort of happy to settle for being in the squad. I want to play. I want to be involved and yeah, just enjoy it really. You know, I play my best rugby when I'm enjoying it. So just go in there with a positive mindset and yeah, just get my head down and see what happens.
Do you feel very well equipped? I mean, we touched on this 18-month journey and you've been spoken about for a long time. You've had a little taste of it. You've won a premiership. Do you feel a much better equipped player that it comes to you now than perhaps you would have been a year and a half ago?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've been involved in sort of maybe like 3 camps leading up to this, maybe 4 including the summer. So I did like 6 weeks of the World Cup one and sort of doing that level of training. That was, you know, another level of what I've ever experienced. And having experience to that and learning all the little things you do when you're involved in such a high level environment. Yeah, I feel like I'm in a really good place at the moment. And yeah, just looking forward to seeing what happens.
Can I ask you, which possibly, let's call it a little leg break, but do you feel the presence of Billy, given how well he's playing? Is that something that do you talk to Billy? Has he opened up to offer advice and stuff? Or are you
I haven't spoken to him. Like, I just sort of focus on myself, really. Another cliche.
I'm glad that you noticed him now, because you're here all the time. Yeah. Not intentionally, but you... There's truth. That's why they're cliche, because you should only be focusing on yourself.
But it's true. Like, I literally focus on myself and like just want to make sure that I'm putting in the performances I can. Do you know what I mean? And if I'm not, then how can I get better and how can I put those performances in? If I'm not putting in good performances there, then I shouldn't be worrying about other people as well. I should just, you know, focus on myself, make sure I'm putting in the performances I want to, and then everything else will happen from there.
I think it's so exciting. I just think back to, how old are you now?
24.
So, yeah, that's why when we're outside, he said about the car, when the car
you've
insurance...
You've done some mileage for 24,
When the car insurance goes at 25, it gets a discount. That's why he's hanging on.
It gets cheaper then.
Gets cheaper, yeah. I was just thinking, what a place to be, 24, England squad, you know...
Prem winner.
Tries
for fun.
Yeah, I just think what a place to be fully embraced and enjoyed, because I think...
Are you living? I mean, do you recognise how good it is right now? I mentioned earlier that it'll be taxes and bins to put out and mortgages to pay and school runs to do and years to come. Are you living your best life right now?
Yeah, 100%. I think having conversations with people after the final, I think we said like some of the best rugby players that have played the game have gone their whole career and not won the premiership. And I'm 24 years old and I've achieved that. Like, no one can take that away from me. And I feel so fortunate and lucky to have done that. And yeah, I've experienced that, I want to experience more. Like, I want to win more. So that's only inspired me to push on further.
Do you know what? It's been great having you on. A guy who has a badder take on the world. It's an amazing place to be, but it's actually incredibly enlightening, I think, to understand where the game is going and how quickly it's moving away from, I mean, we are ever nearer our sell-by date in this sport. But I just want to finish with a couple of very quick bits. I wanted to ask you, as a guy who's got everything in front of him right now, just about the general game and whether you feel a bit of a, and whether guys of your age, Marcus, et cetera, feel a responsibility as custodians of the game right now. Do you know what I mean by that? As in, are you aware of where rugby is as a whole and your role in making rugby, you know, front page news fundamentally, or is that just for other people to do?
You hear a lot like on social media of like people's views on the game. Like, I'm not naive to say that you don't see it, but I think at Quinn's we're almost like rewriting it a little bit. And I think like it's actually crazy. I don't think I understood the magnitude of what we've actually done at Quinn's, like with the amount of people that have actually come up and said like, thank you. And it's almost like, what do you mean, thank you? Like, and they're just like, thank you for like what you're doing at Quinn's, and like you're making us enjoy rugby, and like we love coming to rugby. And I think you're seeing that we're getting sellouts at the Stoop and people are loving it. But yeah, I think we're just doing what we enjoy at Quinn's. Like, we're not almost saying like, oh, rugby is where rugby's at. We need to do this sort of thing. Like, we're just literally playing rugby how we want to play rugby. Everyone's on the same page and we literally just want to enjoy it. And if people are loving that, then great. But we're not sort of thinking that we need to change people's perceptions, if that makes sense.
It does.
I wonder, is there anyone in world rugby at the moment, just a different kind of question, that you look at who play number eight that you would like to emulate or inspire to be like? I found a lot of value in watching some other guys who were doing probably what I wanted to do better around the world, your Hoopers, yeah, your Pococks, your McCaws, guys like that. Is there anyone, do you watch a lot of that rugby and sort of see someone and go, do you know what, I'd like to be that kind of person for England, or I take some inspiration, not necessarily without losing focus on yourself?
Yeah, I think Kieran Reid is probably like number one. I think the way he played the game, the way he used to, you know, keep the ball alive offload, and just his presence that he brought to the game. Yeah, he's definitely up there. Faletau's another one. The way he plays the game, like the way he carries the ball in the wide channels. I just think, yeah, I just find myself just watching him sometimes and thinking like some of the stuff he can do. Like, I love it when he, you know, makes a line break and chips and chases. Like, it's like, do you know what I mean? I think it's crazy, and they're probably two of the best number eights out there. Do you know what I mean?
I found that I used to ask the analysis guy at whichever club I was to clip them up, like a Kieran Reid or like a, you know, a Faletau or a Record, whatever, and just watch them in my own time. And I learned more watching those guys play and how they wanted to play than I did ever doing analysis of other people.
Yeah,
just as like some inspiration. So you go, do you know what, I'm going to do that. So autumn international debut, chip over the top, run around, score under the post.
Not sure how that go down.
But, sorry, if you score,
well, if you score, yeah,
it goes down well. If you,
if
don't score,
then you're not playing again.
Mate, what the fuck are you doing?
Final question, talking of Twickenham. When Lewis Lynas scored, 78th, 79th,
yeah,
your thoughts were?
Oh, it's actually fine. I don't know if you see Marla's interview, but so Steph was off at the time, our captain. So I was sort of captain at the time. So I was like screaming at everyone to come into the huddle halfway line, as you do. And I was like, boys, it's great. Like, clean exit, boys, like, then we've got this. We exit well, then, you know, this is ours, like, focus. And then obviously they kicked off, and then I think it was Jack Noel got it, and then they scored, and then we like all looked at each other and like, shit.
Next wide words.
Yeah, like, what's going on here? And then obviously we turned the ball over. I think Grazer tackled, and yeah, but yeah, it was just crazy. But yeah, Lynas scoring two tries there was
what
great for him.
What is with the hair?
Whose hair? Lynas.
Lewis's.
It's kind of like a, I don't know, what is it? It's like,
you tell me. I mean, I it makes me feel old. I'll put it that way.
The young kids these days, aren't they? I've
got a lid, so I can't comment.
His old man had a golden fleece back in the late 80s, early 90s. And Lewis has got it all there, but he's decided to remove the sides, open top.
That's very fashionable. I mean, you see a lot more front row with those kind of lids these days. Yeah. But I mean, fair play. If he wants to pull it and he keeps scoring tries, doesn't matter what
he's scoring tries for fun at the moment, isn't he?
He is. And just the celebration after the final, you said it was the greatest night.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be disclosed and divulged, or is it just
I went back to obviously change romantics. I think there's a few videos that went out. I think we were singing mostly football songs at the Gareth Southgate and all that. But yeah, no, it's just great. I actually had to get drugs tested after the game, so I missed, like, I was like trying to squeeze out the, you know, something like
trying to wring it out, you can't, yeah.
Literally, and I was like trying to like drink as much as I could, and literally I sort of in and out.
With this whole
watching
go for a wee.
But yeah, like, you know, went back to the stoop and we were sort of in the south corner behind the stands and had all our closest friends and family, and then went on into Twickenham High Street then. And yeah, it was just amazing, you know, just having like all the people that meant most to you there to share that with you. And it was just, yeah, it was great.
Really enjoyable. Thank you very much indeed. It's great to see young guys with the world at their feet conquering. And I hope that this November goes really, we all hope that this November goes really well for you.
Yeah, I think Alex is playing brilliantly well. I think he's an amazing guy and also lovely and humble, jokes aside, even unless it comes to cricket. And I'm excited to see how you go and to enjoy every single moment of it, because I think you're in an amazing position. And I think if you keep working on yourself, the world is literally your oyster. Keep doing it with a smile and not ever getting fazed. I wish I had your sort of mental fortitude. They're either so relaxed, there is either not going on up there, or otherwise you just got the whole thing on lockdown and very chilled. I love it.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Good on you. Don't go anywhere. Are you happy to hang around for five minutes?
Yeah,
because
of course.
We are going to do our GBNR Spiz section. We rebranded last week. You weren't here.
Spiz.
Are you happy with that?
Hush, Spiz, yeah.
We're trying to get through as many bits and bobs as we can in 2.5 minutes. Nice. So
Let's move ourselves on to our golden business, because this weekend we've actually teamed up with Vodafone, as you know, I'm sure, and in partnership with the British and Irish Lions, we're going to support grassroots clubs' return to rugby. And this Saturday, the 23rd of October, we are heading, I'm actually heading home. My rents live about 15 minutes away. They might come on Saturday. You have to.
Well, they're going to lure the drawbridge and come and visit us from this state.
Might do. We'll just get the chopper over. We're heading to the West Country for the first road show at Westbury RFC. Roll up, come one, come all. The men's and the women's first 15s are both running out. I hope the vets might be running out. Perhaps I'll take my boots and have a little dibble.
Well, actually, we're playing walking rugby.
Oh, are we? Okay, I'll
take that. We're playing walking rugby, and I have been asked to take part, and that is about the extent of what I can offer. Right. But apparently, I was talking to the lady at Radio Wiltshire today.
Wait.
And she said it can get very physical and intense. And I sort of guffawed, very posh way of laughing. And I was slightly, yeah, I was slightly taken, but apparently they get very competitive. And I can trust me, Westbury RFC, if any of you come in a radius of about 2 feet of me and get very aggressive, you're getting filled in.
Is Radio Wiltshire alongside North, Norfolk?
Yeah. I think Alan Partridge does the morning.
Have you ever played walking rugby?
No, I can't say I have. No. Is that walking with full contact, or is it
walking? I honest to God,
walking touch.
I hope not. I think it is basically walking and touch, all inclusive, any age.
It's schwalking.
Schwalking.
it's schwalking
rugby. Rugby, basically. Yeah.
We are doing some walking rugby. We've also got a live show in the clubhouse in the evening, which apparently is sold out. Who'd have thought it? Capacity of 6. Obviously.
Shut up. But also with the Vodafone Lions Legacy Tour, which is exactly what we're doing. We're visiting other clubs apart from this one. And the whole idea of this is Vodafone are giving technology, laptops, computers to get people and clubs much more financially sustainable to continue, because grassroots rugby is so important. And guess who they've got asked to do a social media masterclass? Me. I don't know what they're trying to help the club do, get banned, thrown off, but I'm going to be telling people how to behave on social media.
Fight with farmers.
Fight with anybody.
Don't do that.
No, I won't do that.
You're obviously doing how not to do social media.
Well, I mean, I am sort of a media mogul and also quite controversial, so I'll try to balance it out.
A big thanks to Vodafone, who are going to provide the clubs with all sorts of tech and digital skills to support each club's performance, financial sustainability and online presence. And if that was enough, we've also got Canterbury coming along, who are going to give kits out to each of the teams as well. Lovely touch.
Love free stash.
Lovely touch. So if you're in the area, come along around Westbury RFC this Saturday. Should be a lot of fun. And also in our Spiz section this week, we've got our prize draw, the first of which we gave away last week to an incredibly unenthusiastic Robert. So whoever wins today, bring us a little bit more joy and energy, please. It's a pair of tickets to a Premiership League fixture of your choice is the prize, as well as some GBNR merch. Let's give the winner a call right now. Fingers crossed. 321. Dial the number. Hello, Alan.
Yeah. Alan.
Hi.
Alan!
Is that Alan?
Yeah, who's that?
Oh. Three guesses, Alan. It's Alex Payne, James Haskell, and England's newest number 8 sensation, Alex Dombrandt, from The Good, The Bad, and The Rugby.
Oh, my goodness.
That's the energy we're looking for.
Come on, the bingolator. We
is
thought
that
you were
Alan
absolutely.
Bingle? We've given the bingle a dingle. We are calling to let you know, Alan, that you have won a pair of tickets to a Premiership League fixture of your choice, as well as some GBNR merch. What a way to start the week. Tell us your immediate reactions to such a prize.
Quite unbelievable. My phone said no caller ID, so I was just going to ignore it.
It's because we're so exclusive. We don't like to give out any numbers.
Yeah, we don't want you to be able to call us back.
Exactly. This is a one-way conversation.
Oh, thank you very much.
Alan, it's very good to speak, not only to someone who's won our prize, but someone who's bringing a whole heap of energy and excitement. Tell us who. We've obviously got Quinn's storming sensation at 8 on the line at the moment. Say hello, Alex.
Hi, Alan.
who are you going to go watch? Who is your local team of choice? Or who would you like to go and get most value out of an afternoon on the sideline?
I don't know. So I live in South London. So Quinns, you are my local side.
Good
I'll probably
boy.
Go and see you.
No brainer,
well,
surely.
A very good friend of mine has moved down to Bath and he's a season ticket holder down there. So I may go and visit
him. I wouldn't
honestly,
go down there,
I wouldn't
mate.
Go anywhere near Bath right now. And I say that as a loyal fan of the Recreation Ground for 110 years. Go and see Quince. Alex, can we sort out a sign match programme or something?
Yeah, I can sort that for him.
The big man's going to sort you out with a sign match programme at Quince as well, which is a lovely
that
touch.
That sounds wonderful.
Tell us a little bit about you. What are you? What are you doing? Where are you? Who are you? Where have you come from?
So I live in Streatham in South London. I'm currently sat in my disgusting upstairs bedroom, which is also my home office. I'm a graphic designer.
Ooh.
And a million years ago, I used to play a little bit of rugby myself.
Tight head prop. We love tight head props on this show. Worth your weight in gold. Tell us who you used to play for. Give them a shout out.
Sutton and Epsom RFC.
Oh, Alex is nodding.
I used to play for Wallingham Rugby Club when I was younger. They were the big rival of ours, actually.
There we go.
Yeah, many good matches against Wallingham.
Yeah,
Sutton and Epsom and then Birmingham University.
Strong.
And I suppose I have a very tiny rugby claim to frame in as much as played county rugby for Surrey. And my second row was Mr. Simon Shaw.
Stop it.
Alan.
The Bingolators bringing some proper form to the conversation. That's unbelievable. Tell me, was Shaw's a good pusher back in the day? Can I ask that? I don't know. Yeah. I have.
He was amazing. He was just the biggest human being I'd ever met. I think I was 19 and he was only 17, but he was so big they just put him in the 19 side.
Unbelievable. Well, he went on to do some good things off the back of that as well. Tell us a little bit about how long you've been listening to the show. Are you a new joiner or have you been with us for a while? And who's been your favourite guest over the ones you've been listening to?
Oh my goodness, I've been with you quite a while. I wasn't in from the very beginning, and then during lockdown was looking for things to listen to, so I just sort of went back to the beginning and listened all the way through. I really enjoyed when Shorzy was on. I liked listening to Will Greenwood last week. Very interesting, I thought. But mainly, I liked the one where you drank too much gin and were struggling to get through the whole affair.
We enjoyed that one as well.
We had great fun. Honestly, some of the best podcasts we've ever done is when we're absolutely drunk and don't know where we're going. And you can see the lovely producer who's there panicking, making notes, trying to cut
things off. Queen Shira, just trying to get us back on track.
How did you manage that with your bad back? Because I had the same operation about 30 years ago.
Well, actually, I'll be honest with you. So the last episode of the last series, actually, I couldn't come down and do. I was honestly lying in my bed in tears on morphine. Then the season finished. I had the operation. Actually, that was my first kind of show back. And I was being really sensible. Hadn't drunk since the operation. For some reason Tyndall turned up with, that's not like I've been on it now. Some reason Tyndall turned up with some free gin. And I was like, oh, I'll just have a bit of it. And the guy kept topping it up. And after about six drinks, I was like, don't feel my back or my legs anymore. So we then just carried on. And my wife, when I saw my wife, she went, you're walking well. And I was like, I think I'm actually floating. So it was good.
Gin rehab.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Alan, we could make this. Give the Bingle a Dingle. Could be a weekly session on the show.
Give the Bingle a Dingle. That is an. Do you know what, Alan? Because sometimes we talk to people and they're very dry, and we would have faded you out now if you weren't interesting, but you're very exciting.
You are a consummate competition winner.
Great voice for radio as well.
As energetic as you are.
Thank you.
It's very nice to give a fan of the show a pair of tickets to a Premiership League fixture of your choice. Go and see Quinns. Domus will sort you out with something after the game. And I don't know what's in the GBNR merch pack, but whatever it is, I'm sure will be well worth wearing.
Thank you.
Look after yourself, Alan. Thank you for entering. Thank you for winning. You've been a superstar, and hopefully see you at a live show before too long. Love to meet the Bingle
in
person.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Keep up the good work.
Good on you. Back to the day job. Thanks, Alan. All the best.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Love the Bingle's banter.
That's how to do it.
That's it. Just have a bit of energy.
Yeah.
That was very good. Very good.
I like
good.
It. Like, yeah, he's energetic. He had so many layers to him.
I've thrown you under the bus now. I was going to say sign shirt, but I think sign program's probably
as
enough.
As if you've done that to him as well.
Oh, can't say anything but
Alex John Brown will sort you out with something. He's like there sweetly going, yeah. I'll have word with you. Never let anyone con you into it. I'll be like, yeah, I'll do that. Never speak to me again.
It's the Bingle bomb. You've got to give him what he needs.
He was worth a program.
Yeah, he's worth the program. Throw it at him from a distance because you don't want to get too close to the fans.
Right, concentrate. We've got more amazing prizes up for grabs. Next Monday, you're going to want to be involved in this. You've got two Autumn Nations Cup tickets of your choosing up for grabs, as well as some more GBNR merch. Something's not selling very well. We're trying to give
job lot. We were making promises about storage that weren't kept. A tire blazer set that weren't kept.
So cheap, it's as if it fell off the back of a lorry. And the following Monday is the grand prize draw, which is no less than an all-inclusive trip to the Maldives and $3,000 in cash.
Did you say $3,000?
I said $3,000 in
cash. An all expense paid trip to the Maldives?
I don't know where we're getting all this from. I do actually, because we're thanking them at the moment. The runner-up also gets backstage access to a pod recording and $1,000 in cash. Do you want to enter?
It's very good prizes, isn't it?
Some good prizes.
You could probably buy another one of your cars for $1,000.
Probably get a fleet of them. We need to say thank you to BeAway, Furuvari Island Resort and Spa, and the Rugby Wine Club for supplying the prizes. And to top it off, proceeds raised are going to two causes very close to our heart here at GBNR: Cure Parkinson and Restart, the RPA's charity of choice. Domus, these are the details you need. Five tickets for a fiver? We'll collect that on the way out. 15 yeah. for a tenner, 40
no,
for 20
No cash
quid.
On me, unfortunately.
All right.
Oh, that was chestnut. Shake him. Imagine we shake him down. He's upside down, hanging
paid
him out like that.
Paid in Bitcoin. Concentrate. 5 for a fiver, 15 for a tenner, 40 for 20 quid, and 150 for 50 quid. Head to goodbadrugby.com/prize draw to purchase your tickets. Get involved. And if you win next week, bring more jingle than the bingle. We could have so much fun.
Great.
Let's wrap this up with dithering. Yeah. We've got an ad lib to do, which says ad lib, but don't give the game away.
Yeah, well, do you want me to take that over?
Why not, James?
Well, listen, we have something incredible happening on Monday, the 25th of October. We're going to be announcing something so big. If you thought a prize draw with $3,000 cash in the Maldives was the highlight of your year, check out our social media on Monday, where we announce something so big that all of you will want to be part of it. And I just can't even put into words how exciting it is, but stay tuned. Give it a follow.
I'm actually really nervous about it. Not the announcement, but about what it is
we're doing.
Increasingly nervous.
I would be very nervous about it because it's going to require us to organise and be... Yeah, I mean, it's going to... Basically, if you haven't realised, GB and I is an absolute shambles. We're about to put ourselves out there in a big way. Putting out there on a limb, I'd say. Make or break time. You think the merchandise was a waste of time and there's like an anchor hanging around our neck. This could sink us, if I'm completely honest with you.
We're going to be like the shopping trolley in a sort of...
Yeah, in a canal.
In a canal.
Yeah.
In contrast, good luck this November.
Thank you very
much. And obviously the week to come with Quinns, but good luck this November. I hope it goes very, very well indeed. We'll be watching with great interest. Quick final word. Ellis, as leader over the summer, he sort of talked it out. He said he was good. Do we give him seconding of that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, a great leader. I think encouraging the boys to be themselves, and I think that was one of my favourite things about him, and everyone enjoyed it. And it was, yeah, like I said, a great 2 weeks.
Keep enjoying it. It's going to be fascinating to watch. It's going to be a lot of fun. What are you doing?
Well, I think I might not support Quinns. Wow. I'm going to go to one of their games. Someone's offered me to have some fun in a box. So free smash, watching exciting rugby. Can I get a Don Brand shirt? I'll wear a number 8 Don Brand shirt.
Program.
You can have a program.
A program?
If you buy the shirt, I'll sign it.
Okay, fine. Can we get, I don't know if Quinns can sort me out with a wear for the game, a Don Brand 8 shirt. The thing, if they can do
you
it.
You can have a programmer sit next to Mr. Bing.
No, I'll get no
a flag. Get your flag.
A flag. I'll have a flag.
You have to wave it
I'll
around.
I'll wave it.
You like the kids on the tunnel of.
I promise to
you
God.
You can walk out with a tee.
Can I? Holding Marla's hand.
I'd do it.
You know, I'd do it. I wouldn't care. I'd 100% do it. If they let me hold his hand.
Full kit.
Right. Full kit. I'd do it. Honestly, someone make that happen, but it might detract from the game.
Right.
Yeah.
But
is
also,
that,
might
is that what it's become?
Don't leave me out. I'm still relevant.
We have been the good, the bad, and the right. That's been our Spiz section. I think it's been another 40 minutes. It's meant to be 3. Mm. We've been the good, the bad, and the rugby. Alex, thank you. Go forth and conquer. Look forward to catching up again soon. We will see you next week. That is it from us. Enjoy all that's to come. And actually, this week, we're just going to leave you with a little note that the show is pulled together by our producer queen, Shara Kilgallen, and the world-class fixer that is Matt Chuck Norris. The good, the bad, and the rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Good luck to all of them. Speak to you again soon. Love and hugs in the meantime. Bye, bye, bye.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.